Podcasts of Homegrown are made possible thanks to support from listeners like you. Consider becoming a member of WFPL by calling 502-814-6565 or at the website wfpl.org. Thanks. Welcome back to Homegrown. I'm Janine Wishy.
I'm Bob Hill.
And today on the show, we are going to visit, you've been there before,
it's
but I have not.
It's a great place.
I'm very excited. We're going to go visit the Americana Community Center. They have a fabulous community garden there that's open to the people that they serve, which are mostly like refugees,
right.
Immigrants, you know, and U.S.-born folks in the neighborhood there off Southside Drive. And they've opened up this great plot of land to families so they can have their own gardens.
Community is the word.
Community
exactly
is the word.
Exactly what they're doing
yeah.
in every way.
And they've done it so well and so nicely.
Yeah.
They've installed a rain garden this year. They've got a 800-gallon rain well, only 200 gallons short of my 1,000-gallon rain well. But, I mean, that is, I don't know, it's just like, they're doing everything right from the get-go. So I'm really, really excited about going out there.
Yeah, they do so much good there beyond food, mm-hmm. too. It's just a, mm-hmm. it's a great place. It's what this country can be and will be and is
and should be,
many
in
times.
Fact. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And then we're also going to talk with Tim Haas and Jan Bean. Some of you may know them from a PBS series that used to be on called Herbal Impressions with Tim and Jan. And they're herb growers,
yeah.
and know their way around in the kitchen. And they've recently co-authored a book called The Herb Garden Gourmet, Grow Herbs, Eat Well, and Be Green. So we'll see what's going on with that with Jan and Tim.
Yeah, I had no idea you could cook herbs until I heard the show. I talked to these people.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, this food just shows up, right?
Yeah.
You actually take it in the kitchen and
yeah,
put it in pots and stuff?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to thank Janet when I get home.
There's always something to learn on Homegrown for Bob Hill.
Cooking, eh?
All right. So that's coming up today. We hope that you will stick around. Bob, what's going on in your garden?
My Asiatic lilies are just incredible. They're like a big brass band. Mm-hmm. It seems like in the last couple of years, and we might do a show on this in the near future, I think, but in the last couple of years, they've gotten more popular. Just these screaming yellows and oranges, and sometimes a little too vivid maybe for some people's habits, but I really like them in a certain place. And of course, the old-fashioned stargazer's been around forever. Mm-hmm. But they reproduce like gerbils.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have four, then you have eight, then you have 10. So,
and some of them are really, really tall
yeah.
and like can really make fabulous statements
right.
in the garden. So, yeah.
They're doing fine. And then two other plants that are doing really well this summer are my Vitex,
mm-hmm.
another unused plant, which I really like. It's kind of a tall, it's 8 or 10 feet tall with kind of cool, either blue, I guess, or white flowers on it. Very interesting plant. And a climbing hydrangea called Moonlight,
mm-hmm.
which is really a fast-growing, shade-loving plant with a kind of a gray-green leaf. It's just a great plant.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all doing great. What a great growing year.
It
I keep
really
saying
has.
That, but I can't imagine a better one.
Plenty of rain.
How about the Wishy State?
Has
What's up
us
out
along.
There?
So have you ever seen a spigelia?
I've grown them.
A spigelia?
Yeah. Not for the second year.
Not for spigelia. I'd never really heard of it until a couple years ago when my husband brought a couple home.
Right.
There, it's this fabulous little perennial plant, herbaceous perennial plant, foliage-wise, just like lance-shaped leaves. And the bloom is phenomenal.
Right.
It is a tubular, bright red, kind of like sheath, I guess, first.
Mm-hmm.
Then out the top of that little flower pops this yellow kind of burst of another part of the
right.
flower. And it is just crazy bright and cheery and kooky looking and fabulous.
Did it come back for you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I lost mine. I guess it was a drainage issue or something.
Maybe.
I know friends in here in Louisville that raise them every year and they look really good.
Mm-hmm.
But mine didn't come back and I was only part kidding when I said for 1 year, but I want mm-hmm. to raise them again. It is a great, one of those underused plants, and you wonder why.
Well, I think it might take a couple of years for them to get established and like really look good. And maybe they do have like drainage, you know, sort of like those really tough plants that you can stick anywhere, but then they die in the wintertime because the soil's too compacted and wet. And then, if stuff isn't real showy in the nursery, people aren't going to pick it up.
No.
You know what I mean?
True,
and that spring flowering sort of kicking things into action. But if you find spigelia pick it up because it is a super cool perennial plant.
Fun word to say too.
It is a fun word.
Like the Sopranos or something.
Spigelia. And just another note, Bob. What is going on with my Roma tomatoes? They're all stunted. Everybody else looks fabulous tomato wise, but my Romas are just lagging behind.
Have you been talking Latin to them?
I haven't.
That's the problem.
Okay, I'll start doing that.
Amas, amat.
And I've talked to other gardeners too, and they've been having problems with their Roma type of tomatoes too.
Ours look good. I don't know. Maybe it is a Latin question. But you've got the answer lurking, I know.
Somewhere. I don't know what it is exactly. I'm thinking that it might be the soil because I planted them in a different area than everybody else. And the soil in that location is not as good as in the other areas. So that may be it.
They're holding their breath until things get better.
I don't know.
Romas will do that.
It's depressing, though. All right. Let's see. There is an event out at Udell Gardens. They're presenting a program, What's in a Name? Trademarks, Cultivars, Genus, and Species. July 1st from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. They'll talk about, you know, plant names, what it all means. The whole day includes lunch and the lessons. And you can get more detailed information by going online. Check out our website at wfpl.org.
And I heard Mr. Linnaeus will be there in person.
And that would be amazing. Yeah. Maybe he knows what's wrong with my aromas.
Since he died 260 years ago.
That's right.
But speaking of being here in person, we're about to have two people that know their herbs.
They do know their herbs. My herbs are doing well. Tim Haas and Jan Bean are joining us now. Previously, they hosted the PBS series Herbal Impressions with Tim and Jan. And now they're launching a new series on RFD TV called From the Garden to the Kitchen. They've also co-authored several books together, including their most recent, The Herb Garden Gourmet, Grow Herbs, Eat Well, and Be Green. Tim and Jan, welcome to Homegrown.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having us.
Sure. Yeah. Listen, I read somewhere that neither one of you is necessarily this longtime herb enthusiast. It sort of happened serendipitously for you both. Can you all talk about the newfound fascination and obsession, if you will, with herbs?
Well, I'm not going to call it newfound on my part. It was it was back in like 95, I think. Yeah, 95. My father was dying of cancer, and we were holding a vigil there at home, and a sweet lady from my mother's church came by and was telling me that the church was going to be bringing food in, and she said, tomorrow we're going to be bringing in a rosemary chicken. Mm-hmm. And I made the comment, I said, rosemary? I said, you know, that I've always heard of that flavor, but it's just not a flavor that I'm familiar with. Mm-hmm. Well, she just seemed very shocked and appalled that I didn't know. And so she proceeded to educate me on herbs. Now, this is how uneducated I was. I honestly thought that herbs and spices all came from other countries. They were imported here in the little jars and cans and bottles and such.
Sure.
Because my grandfather had always had a huge garden, and I thought, well, if he didn't grow any herbs, then they just couldn't be grown here.
Uh-huh.
So I was very shocked when she said, I want you to come and see my herb garden, and then I want you to start one. And that opened up a whole world to me.
Wow.
And I can't lay it down. I love learning about herbs and sharing with other people what we've learned.
Because, you know, same way with me, too. I've been at this for quite a long time. I love to cook. And so I've always used herbs and spices in my cooking. However, I've never had an herb garden myself. I never cooked with fresh herbs.
Okay.
Again, I was like Jan. I thought they were pretty much dried, ground up.
From other places.
Yes, and you purchase those in your local grocery stores. But through the years, being friends with Jan and her having an herb garden, and of course she had to show it off to me and laugh that I didn't have one, you know, got me inquisitive about raising my own fresh herbs too. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you something. Once you start experimenting with fresh herbs, you never go back.
Mm-hmm.
You always, when you think of putting fresh basil on a tomato sandwich, something we do here in the South, you know, nothing like a tomato sandwich, but putting fresh basil on there, you talk about educating that sandwich. It does.
Well, you know, I've long been, it's the whole squash dilemma in the summer. Whatever vegetables in the garden, that's what we eat every night, right? It's nothing goes to waste. All you have to do is have a fabulous collection of herbs to make every night a little different, even if you're eating the same vegetable.
Oh, yes. That is so true. Getting back to rosemary, which is not my favorite herb, by the way, but just for the sake of talking about it again, it is such a distinct flavor that you really don't mix any other herbs with it because the flavor is just so pronounced.
True.
And that's what I love about herbs. you know, thyme is a universal herb, and you put it with everything, thyme and parsley. But when you get to, like, the rosemary, another one is dill. You know, dill has a very special, delicate flavor all its own. You don't mix a lot of other things with it. So you're right about that. You can get, you can serve the same foods, basic foods, and get a variety of flavors along with it because of the different herbs that you can add to it.
And a little bit later, we'll talk about the specifics of what herbs pair well with other things. But let's first sort of talk about just the fundamentals of growing herbs. What's a smart herb garden plan? You know, what kind of soil, sun, water, you know, should people keep in mind if they're beginning a small herb garden for the very first time?
Well, I think the important thing to remember is that herbs are weeds. And so there's not a lot of difficulty in growing them. And you don't have to have a large garden space to do that. Container gardening with herbs is quite easy, and there's a chapter in our book about that. You can pair a number of herbs in a pot, and, of course, you have to water because it's like humans living in a bus, you know. The roots they dry out quickly, and they're not no plant is real happy in a container. So you have to make sure you water it from time to time. But they're very easy to grow, and we would recommend anybody to give it a try. If you don't have a piece of land, if you've got somewhat of a yard, plant a little herb garden by the kitchen door.
Sure.
That's been very common in the past.
What about people that live in condos or apartments? We suggest that you get your neighbors involved. You perhaps select a couple of varieties of herbs that you like and get your neighbors involved, maybe have them to do another couple varieties and switch, share. That way you get a whole variety of herbs. And we suggest always basil. That's our favorite herb. And I will suggest that you put basil in a large, if you're going to do container gardening, to put it in a large pot by itself. And it will, the more you use it, the more it will continue to give you food to eat. They love for you to use them. We suggest rosemary. If you could plant it somewhere as an ornamental top bush, it will get as large as a car, depending on where you live. That will winter over. It's not one of, like basil, when you plant it, it's not going to come back the next year.
Tim, I think for us here, ARP, the variety ARP of rosemary, is the one that winters over the best for us.
Very good.
Yeah.
But I love, and I'll tell you something, another suggestion on using herbs. We will snip herbs and mix them with our fresh-cut flowers and bring them in the house. And it adds that natural potpourri smell into your home. If you like rosemary, you're not going to be able to use it all, even if you cut some and dry them. Freeze them, whatever you decide to do, you still can't use all that it's going to produce. So, you know, try thinking about making a bouquet garni. I'll get it out in just a minute. And put it in your returns, in your home or in your vents. And it'll just kind of add that fragrance throughout your house.
Yeah, I love that bus trip analogy. I feel like an herb sometimes in some bus trips. But let's talk about, I'm sitting here trying to draw a mental picture of what your garden looks like so our listeners will understand. How many different herbs do you have, and what's your place? If I sat there with you next to you, what would it look like?
What I did, I had a fairly large garden spot. My grandfather came years ago to my place with his tractor and decided where my garden would be. He created this huge garden space. So anyway, I had to tame it down a little bit. So I went right down the middle of it and created an herb garden. So if you first walked out to the garden, you'd be on a little pathway. I got some and got some real nice stones and laid them out. And I filled that up with lavender. So you get that nice purple and, you know, the nice smell from the lavender. And then I put an arbor up that you'd walk through. And then as you walk out into the herb garden, you'll find rosemary and tarragon, a place for basil. And then, now because there's so many varieties of basil, I put some in the herb garden, and then I planted some between my tomato plants. They're in two different places. But I have another place that I've had some varieties of thyme growing. And, of course, some of these herbs, actually most herbs are perennials, so they're going to come back year after year. There's another bargain with them. You put them in, install your herb garden, and they come back. And they bring more with them when they come.
They do.
They're good at that.
Now, I'm going to shock your listeners. Jan and I are not married to each other. So I have a different herb garden than she does.
Mm-hmm.
I do container gardening.
Okay.
So if you come to my home, I don't have the privilege of living on as many acres as Jan does. So I have a very small herb garden of containers, and I have basil. I do have some parsley. I'm trying it again this year. I have thyme, sage, rosemary, dill. A lot of the basic herbs I have, oregano, marjoram,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of them winter over, and they're doing great.
Mm-hmm. What's your opinion about fresh versus dried herbs and just like the quantity that you have to use in the kitchen if you have fresh herbs versus dried herbs?
Well, keep in mind, when you dry an herb, it's going to cause it to have a more pronounced flavor.
Okay.
And there's benefits to using dried over fresh, depending on what kind of cooking you're doing. If you're doing soups or stews, something like that, that's going to be cooking for an hour or longer. If you use fresh herbs and put them in the beginning stage, you're going to lose a lot of the flavor.
Okay.
That's why it's important to use dried, because it can take the cooking process.
Okay. So when you're, excuse me.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
When you're using fresh herbs then, you want to put them in at the very end or almost more as a garnish? Or
no,
should they be cooked at all?
And it'll give that flavor.
Okay.
I suggest using both. If you have dried and mm-hmm. fresh, if you're doing a sauce or a soup or stew, use the fresh at the very last minute just to give it that extra mm-hmm. oomph that you need, to take that flavor to the next step,
uh-huh.
Give it a more fresh taste.
Is there a difference between the nomenclature herb and spice?
You know what? There is. There really is. Spices and herbs, there is a difference. Most of the spices that we get do come from other countries.
Yeah.
And major wars have been fought due to those spices years
redeemed.
Ago. But
uh-huh.
An herb is when you use the leaf of the plant and the stems. But with spices, you use the seed or you use the bark.
Ah.
For example, with cinnamon. Cinnamon, you use the bark of the cinnamon tree for the flavor.
Okay.
So there is a difference, yes.
Okay.
What about harvesting the herbs, the harvest at its peak? How do you know and when do you do that?
We always harvest in the morning after the dew has dried off, but before the day gets really hot.
Mm-hmm.
And pick those leaves off and bring them in and wash them. I put them in a salad spinner and give them a little whirl. And then I lay them out in a box with a very small lip around the edge of it and put a towel in the box. And then I put the herbs in over it and just turn them every day or two. And before you know it, they're dried out.
Mm-hmm.
And then put those in glass jars and put them in a dark place. And you've got your herbs in later in the year. And the way you know, I just watch my stuff grow. Now, for example, basil, when it wants to send a shoot up out of the middle of the stem, like it's a little flower,
mm-hmm.
I pinch that back, and then I start picking leaves.
Okay.
So I give it a chance to go almost till it flowers, and then I start picking off the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But you can actually start using your herbs almost immediately after you plant them. If you get them already with a little bit of age to them,
mm-hmm.
A lot of nurseries that you go to will start them from seed. If they're very small, you don't want to use them. But a lot of times when you go to farmers markets or things like that and buy your herb plants, they come pretty mature. At that point, you can go ahead and start using them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to harvest them and use them fresh, we encourage that you wash them and immediately either wrap them with a damp cloth,
paper towel, uh-huh.
and put them in an airtight container. Or what I do is wash them and put them in a vase that you can put in the refrigerator.
That's what I usually do, and I just keep it next to the kitchen sink, actually.
Yeah, and I love that.
Uh-huh.
And that way, you know, it's a pretty arrangement that you have there. Plus, you can use them whenever you need them.
Exactly.
Can you give our listeners a sense of how you laid out the book and the material in it?
Well, actually, each chapter features a different herb. And so at the beginning of the chapter, we give you some little folklore, a little information on how to grow, how to harvest. Then we give you a variety of recipes. And at the end of the chapter, we give you two blank pages, one that says notes from the garden and the other one notes from the kitchen.
Excellent.
So the book becomes
mm-hmm.
like a gardening journal or even a guest journal.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end of the book, we paired together some recipes say that if you've tried a variety of herbs, then this will give you a way to create some different recipes and maybe have company over. And then we also give you some blank recipe cards. If someone says, hey, I like the recipe, how about sharing it?
Mm-hmm. So
we did everything but come and plant the garden.
We've got to do something ourselves, right? So let's talk about some of the recipes that you guys have included. Can you pair some of the classic herbs with, you know, some of the classic vegetables and meats that are out there, you know, just to give people sort of the baseline of what goes well with what?
Well, let me tell you what I like. I love to take root vegetables, whether it be potatoes, carrots, parsnips, fennel bulb, mm-hmm. Wash those, cut them up, put them together with a little olive oil, salt, pepper, and rosemary. Mm-hmm. And here the fresh is really good to use. Just make sure it's minced up really fine.
Okay.
And sprinkle that over those. Put them in a 450 degree oven for about 45 minutes. And you talk about a nice side dish with a piece of grilled meat. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of mine and Jan's favorite recipes in this book is the cucumber lime salsa.
Oh, absolutely. That's in the chapter under cilantro.
Cilantro.
Okay.
Very good spin off of regular tomato salsa, but we're using cucumbers.
Huh.
And works wonderful as a side dish to a piece of grilled fish,
mm-hmm.
Or it would be great to use as a dip. Mm-hmm. With some nice blue corn chips, mm-hmm. to serve at your next party.
So it's lime, obviously, cucumbers, and cilantro. What else?
And we use parsley.
Mm-hmm.
See, the thing is, Jan was touching on this a bit earlier. There are some herbs like rosemary that are very pronounced in their flavors that really don't pair nicely with something like basil, mm-hmm. or thyme, something that also has a pretty distinct harsh flavor or pronounced flavor. If you're going to mix another herb with it, you need something that's very subtle, like parsley,
mm-hmm.
Something like that. It doesn't compete well with other herbs like dill and some of those others.
Mm-hmm. Under the chapter on basil, we created this essence that was just using sea salt and garlic and basil and parsley. And we mix all that up together, and then we give you several different recipes to try it in. There's a creamy bacon and mushroom sauce with linguine,
mm-hmm.
and we make a salad dressing out of it, adding some mustard and vinegar and olive oil and such. And then we also make a basil and garlic spread to make some garlic bread to go with your meals. So
mm-hmm.
Those two things are our signature in the book.
They are.
Like the cucumber lime salsa and the essence.
Huh.
Under the chapter on basil. So it's a great book, and there's a lot of good reasons to try herbs, and we give you a couple hundred reasons right here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
The book is great. Anything that pairs something from the garden and the kitchen is right up my alley, and we certainly appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Uh-huh, take care.
Tim Haas and Jan Bean are the hosts of a new series on RFD TV, From the Garden to the Kitchen. They've also co-authored The Herb Garden, Gourmet, Grow Herbs, Eat Well, and Be Green, published by Source Books. Of course, if you'd like more information on The Herb Garden, Gourmet, and Tim and Jan, please visit our website at WFPL.org.
Coming up after the break, we visit the Americana Community Gardens, where the international diversity of Louisville comes together over vegetables. You're listening to Homegrown on 89.3. WFPL. Welcome back to Homegrown. This is Bob Hill.
And Janine Wishy.
And Ms. Wishy, we are standing here at the Americana Community Center overlooking about a 10,000 square foot community garden, nicely fenced off in about maybe 20 different plots. And the neat thing about it is this center represents 67 different nations, really, people that came here. And the diversity of the plants in the garden just speaks for what this thing is all about.
Yeah, and the diversity in terms of how stuff is planted and staked, and that all is sort of amazing, too. It's just so representative. I think this is where Louisville meets the world, is what they say here at the Americana Community Center, and the garden definitely represents that. And we're here today to talk to Helmer
Duverge. He's the director of family initiatives at the Americana Community Center. It's out here on Southside Drive. Immigrants, refugees, U.S.-born families are all served here. Various things are offered through the community center, but we're definitely here to see the garden. But Helmer, thanks for inviting us out. Welcome to Homegrown. We're delighted to be here. Can you give us a little bit, before we talk about the garden, can you give us a little background on what the community center actually does?
Sure. We're very excited about the things that are happening here. You know, we've run out of space already. We need to build another building. We need to find space where we can provide additional services to families. We do everything. We do ESL, English as a Second Language. We do GED. Mm-hmm. We do computer classes. We have Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. We have a women's group that works with fabrics. We have teen after-school program. We have data care. We have all kinds of opportunities for people to really not only improve their basic skills, their literacy skills, but also participate in a safe environment where they're welcome and they're respected as internationals.
Mm-hmm. Bob, what'd you say, 67 different countries represented here?
Like 5,000 different people at least have different classes and need and reasons to be here.
So a couple years ago, you all decided to start the community garden here. Whose idea was that, and kind of what was the thinking? You're not sure. You know, what was the thinking behind something like having a community garden?
Well, we knew that it was something that is needed because the folks that are coming to this part of the country, this part of the city, rather, don't have access to land. And that's something that they could do back home. They were able to farm. So we knew that it would give them something to do here, and they feel comfortable and that they feel good about, you know, what they're doing, again, using skills that perhaps would not have been, if we hadn't provided the opportunity, they would just sit at home. Mm-hmm. So we got people that were farmers and know how to farm, and as you can see, they do a great job of it. So we knew that it was something that was going to be popular.
Mm-hmm. So I would think, too, it's important that information and that knowledge isn't lost and it gets passed on to the next generation. Do you have kids that are involved with the projects out here as well?
That's right. Entire families come out here. You see them in late afternoons. I leave around 7 o'clock and they're all out here working together, different ages, different nationalities. It's truly, truly an international community garden.
Take us through from the first year to the third year into it now and how it's expanded and changed from when you began.
Well, it has definitely grown. Every year it gets bigger and bigger. As you can see, it's reaching almost a soccer field. And just this morning we were out here looking at where we're going to start the kids' garden. And we're going to have to sacrifice the grass because we're out of space. Mm-hmm. So every year it keeps growing.
And we'll talk in a little bit to Lauren about the kids' program and that summer program this year. Another thing you guys have done is what we could call the support system for the landscape. You have the best looking rain garden I have seen thus far right here as well, and this fabulous rain well you're collecting water to use for irrigation. Talk about this project here and who was involved in putting it in.
Sure. We got funding from MSD to put this together. Our gardener was at a meeting and got a heads up on this. We applied. We got the grant, and last summer, 10 teens from different parts of the world worked tirelessly all summer long working on this with one adult supervisor. So it gives, you know, they have so much pride in this. They take care of it. They protect it. And they work together side by side. Kids that back home, probably the ethnicities were, you know, at war. And here they are standing side by side with each other working on this. So we're very, very, very proud of this. And it won an award.
Did it? Oh, that's right. The Fred Wishy Brightside Award.
That's
yes.
Right.
Who was that again? And it's a big garden. You come out and see it sometime, but it's probably 150 feet across and maybe 60 feet wide. And it goes in an arc. There's a sidewalk that arcs around it. And it's really well done. It's just kind of fun to look at because it is clean and green and well watered indeed.
And that kind of begs the question too, Helmer, the notion of clean and green. Is there a goal in mind in terms of having these young guys, you know, a part of creating this rain garden to instill in them sort of green, environmentally sound practices, but also, you know, job skills and other types of things?
Absolutely. They need to come on time. They need to work together. They need to allocate resources, make decisions. So it's not just the gardening. Mm-hmm. There are other things behind it. And right now we just started a work crew which is going to be working out here. We hired 10 teens, and they're going to be working out here for 2 months. We got some Obama money, and we're going to train them on job readiness skills, but also out here, cleaning, maintaining the grounds. So, again, it gives them a sense of belonging, but it also gives them an experience over the summer. And, you know, with today's economy, our kids, they can't find work because people our age are working at the jobs that they would.
Right.
So it's an incredible opportunity for them here. Mm-hmm. So 10 will be out here all summer working with Lauren and Isaiah, our gardener.
It's not just kids. You told a wonderful story earlier. Share with our listeners about a woman who comes out here and planted along the fence row. I believe she's in her 80s, and it's just almost like sacred work to her. Talk about her a little bit.
Yeah, it's a very funny story. Last year, we had a lot of difficulties with her. She's very, 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 we even made a home visit to try to explain to her the rules of the garden. And this year, we were all, oh boy, she's coming back. and she came back, and she took over a huge plot, two huge plots. And I came out and I said, no, only one plot. And in her broken English, she kept arguing with me that no. And I said, no, no, no. And she said, yes, yes, yes. And that's as far as we got. And then she put her head down and took her bicycle and started walking away. And it just got to me.
Oh, yeah.
I ran over there and said, okay, big plot for you, big. And it's everybody here, the staff, was teasing me that I'm a softie, you know, that she played me.
But she does very well with her plots now and
yeah,
has great,
yeah.
great plants. And
yeah, and, you know, what I told the staff was, who are we to take away something like this for her? You know, she's probably planning all year long to be out here. She comes out in the fall and starts working. She's the first one that starts working in the season. So it's something that's meaningful to her, you know, otherwise she'd be home. She'd be home doing what?
Great story.
So what are the interactions between your gardeners? You've got sort of an African side, if you will. You can tell in terms of what crops are planted, the styles of staking, that sort of thing. And then a further section on the end where there's a lot of Bosnian gardeners, et cetera. I mean, and there are clear distinctions in terms of the style, as I had mentioned before. Are people coming together, interacting well, as you would hope?
Sometimes you get people that clash with each other. Mm-hmm. The Vietnamese woman last year, right. That was a problem. She was clashing with a Congolese guy, you know, over their areas, their limitations, to the point where somebody came in the middle of the night and sabotaged his plans. And we don't know who it was, but right. We have an idea. So they just get used to coming every year. So, you know, they stake out their area, and we pretty much let them run it. We mm-hmm. try not to intervene or interfere too much. Only when there's conflict, they'll come in and complain to us, mm-hmm. and then we'll try to get them together to try to talk things through.
So are most of the gardeners sort of repeat gardeners from the last 3 years?
Absolutely.
So everybody's getting used to each other? And
Definitely, they come back. Uh-huh. We have a meeting early in the spring, and we announce the rules and the regulations, and we have them sign an agreement, and it pretty much takes off. You know, it takes off on its own.
So you've learned to say green beans in 67 languages by now?
I try.
Helmer, thank you. We want to talk to Lauren a little bit as well about some of the plants in the garden. You've recently taken it over. Lauren Sawyer's their community garden coordinator. We were walking around earlier, Lauren, sort of pointing out plants that we wouldn't necessarily grow, or we weren't really sure what they are. What's been your experience in terms of the types of plants diversity that the gardeners are choosing?
Yeah, for the most part, my biggest surprise was finding plots full of amaranth, or pigweed as we know it, which, you know, bugs us to death when we're farming or have been in the past. And finding plots of that really blew my mind. And the fact it also kind of scared me because it takes over.
Yeah.
You all know how it is. And so I'm just waiting for the garden to be taken over by pigweed. But I figure that they know how to manage it, since
uh-huh.
that's what they've
right.
they're used to. And those are predominantly Africans that are growing the pigweed. So,
okay. Any other plants that's sort of unusual or that you're not quite sure what they are yet?
Yeah, the one that we decided, the legume, uh-huh. that one blew my mind. I still couldn't figure out what it was. And we asked them around. We asked around, and someone told us that was sweet potato leaf,
okay.
and we didn't know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been doing research, but
to
no avail.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's part of the fun of this place. The teacher learns from the students.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. That's the main reason that I took the job, was because I figured that I would learn more mm-hmm. about gardening, about this whole idea, you know,
mm-hmm.
working with them than working on my own or working with people that are from Kentucky. So,
and you do share the results here. We had some raspberries earlier on here, but later on in past years, have the crops been shared around to different people? Is there any kind of swap going on at the end of the day?
Yeah, what one person is lacking, they definitely will, you know, make up, and they'll trade and stuff like that. This year we're going to try and do some potluck dinners so that to get everybody, you know, to get to know each other a little bit more and to share the wealth that they've gotten from their garden.
Share some cooking styles too, not just gardening styles.
That's what we're excited to see. We're definitely excited to see how that turns out. But
are there opportunities too, do you think, in the future, having like a farmer's market kind of thing or something that will allow them to take it one step beyond?
Yes.
And swapping, you know, different sort of crazy types of seeds and other vegetables that we may not otherwise be able to get a hold of?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually just brought that up the other day. We were talking about it, and it is something that could happen, but it has to happen down the road, just because right now we're just trying to get everything going smoothly, and then, but yeah, there some interest has come up about it, so we're going to work on that, and but we don't know where yet, because a lot of them aren't interested in selling. They want them for themselves, you know, so we're trying to figure that out.
And Helmer, you may actually have the answer to this. Is there any way to determine if you have sort of help offset poverty issues and nutrition sort of issues by offering this sort of thing?
I think so, definitely. We're helping them out. Those are, you know, if you got tomatoes, those are money that you can put in something else. Mm-hmm. So it subsidizes the cost of their food. Yeah, definitely.
Impact on health as well, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, last week during training, we had a woman come in and she was telling us the stats of how when the immigrant, well, this is the groups of people that she used. She said Mexican people, when they come over, and people from Africa, mm-hmm. their infant mortality rate is so low, and their overall health is so much better mm-hmm. up until 2 years. And then once they're here for 2 years, it just plummets. And it's basically because they're, you know,
away from their
traditional diets, and they're eating the stuff that we have out there. So I feel like this kind of, it just promotes it, and it just says, yes, live the way that you guys did and raise the food the way that you did. And another interesting thing that I found was that back in a lot of their countries, they don't use herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers because they don't have it. They don't have the money for that or the resources, so they do it organically.
Yeah. And it's not allowed here, is it? The use of,
no, it's not here. It's not.
So. Well, is that worth thinking about? An indictment of the American fast food life, I guess. Your next step up is the kids' garden. There's a space over here. It's maybe 40 feet wide and 100 feet long. How are you going to pull this one off? Get all these kids together to...
Yeah, well, it's actually pretty neat because for their lunch period is from 11:30 to 1, and they can do whatever they want. They can go to it's called the Grease Cave, which is a bike cave over there where they can bring their bikes because a lot of them ride their bikes. So they can work on their bikes and learn how to, you know, dismantle them and then put them back together. They can go into the gym, they can go into the library, the computer lab, or we're going to have a garden club this year. So, because a few of the children have expressed an interest, and so we're really excited about this and just gonna get our hands dirty with the kids. So,
and what can our listeners do to help this project along? What do you need that maybe somebody out there can provide for you?
Funds, that's about it. Funds, and if anybody has seeds would be great, or old farming equipment, not farming equipment per se, but gardening tools. Compost would be just so much appreciated. Wood chips, mulch, straw, that sort of thing.
Just shovels, hose, rakes, just basic
things
that we take for granted pretty much here.
Absolutely.
I think I can provide some of that. I know just where to look.
The mulch anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what you guys are doing here is fabulous. Do you welcome visitors to come check out the rain garden and what you're doing here organizationally?
Absolutely. This is a community center, so therefore anybody's welcome. We don't turn people away. We want to serve as many people as possible. So if you want to come out here and take a look, we'll give you a tour. If you want to come out in the afternoon and see the different international folks working in the garden, you're welcome to. And if you want to volunteer, we're always looking for volunteers to work with our programs. Our programs, all of them have a waiting list. So that's how much this center is having an impact on the community. So come on out, volunteer, help us out. We need all the help we can get.
All right. Thank you both very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you for everything.
Helmer Duverge is the Director of Family Initiatives at the Americana Community Center located on Southside Drive. This center serves a diverse community in many ways, including an opportunity to cultivate a bountiful vegetable garden of your own. And of course, for more information on the center and the garden and to see photos, you can visit our website at wfpl.org.
Coming up next, a few listener questions and Miss Wishy's short and new Latin Word of the Week. You're listening to Homegrown on 89.3 WFPL.
Please, mister, don't you touch me, tomato. Please, don't you touch me, tomato. Touch me, yeah, me pumpkin potato. Goodness sake, don't touch me, tomato. You touch me this, touch me that. Touch me everything I got. Touch me plum, me apple too. But here's one thing you just can't.
Well, Miss Wishy, we have some more questions.
We do indeed, Bob. Back from Americana Gardens.
Yep.
And we've got some gardening questions. In fact.
We thought we'd covered them all.
That's right. Here's one from Robert, Bob. Wondering if the upside down tomato planters as seen on TV really work. What's your thoughts?
I know they work for like geraniums. We have upside down planter pots, we call them, and they're fun. What you do is it's a pot with holes at both ends. And you plant your plant on the top side and let the roots get established. Then you flip it over and you water through the hole at the other end.
Ah.
And phototropism pulls up the plants around the side.
Mm-hmm.
I know it works with annuals and bedding plants because we have geraniums that by the end of the summer will be up to the top of the bowl. And they're really fun to see them that way.
Yeah.
Tomatoes, maybe the smaller cherry tomatoes. I don't think a big old better boy would be a happy, you know, I don't think it would reach up to the sky.
Well, but I don't think they necessarily reach up so much like the annuals would just because they are longer. So you're going to have them hanging down.
I'm just thinking of the weight.
Yeah.
Eventually, a great big tomato, you know, if it grows really well, is going to be dangling 3 feet from the bottom of a little bitty pot.
Yeah.
That could be a problem, but maybe the cherry tomatoes would reach up.
I think that these fancy ones that people see on TV and in magazines might be more heartily equipped.
I'm not sure.
I think I've seen people do upside down in buckets and, you know, like the big, the white pickle buckets.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it'll work, but I suspect too, and is it the same with your annuals? You're going to have to water a lot more if you have a container suspended like that. So, you know, just make sure you're going to be home all summer so you can water your plants.
It's just fun. I mean, they look fun. Mm-hmm. They're fun and interesting. I don't know why you'd grow a tomato that way other than have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what would be the point?
Well, some people don't have space or a yard.
Well, I guess you could hang it on the back porch. Somebody out there who's tried this, please call us and let us know if your tomatoes actually do thrive.
Exactly.
In a planter, because we don't seem to be too sure.
We don't seem to be too sure. We always use the ground. Here's another tomato question.
Okay.
This one's from Wayne. About 10 years ago, I did a Japanese tomato ring, which your father and my favorite gardener, Fred Wishy, thanks, Wayne, recommended, and they were very good in small spaces. Another small space idea.
Yep.
In recent years, why have we not heard more about them? Have you ever heard of the Japanese tomato ring?
Nope.
I have, actually, because of Daddy.
You grew up with it, yeah.
We did one a couple of years and then sort of resorted back to the old-fashioned way of just, you know, normal in the ground. But the Japanese tomato ring, basically, I've seen people just use even tomato cages, and you put the tomato cage in the ground, stick it in the ground, and then you fill the cage with compost and mulch and leaf mold and all kinds of stuff. So you create a very kind of organic, rich tower of power, right?
Okay.
Then you plant a couple of tomato plants around that on the outside in the ground. And then as it, you know, that tower of organic matter will fertilize and keep the ground moist where parts of the roots are growing of the tomatoes that you've planted around. Then as the tomato plants grow, you can attach it to the outside of that cage.
Ah.
And it's easy to harvest, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, why people don't talk about it, I don't know. But, you know, Bob and I were discussing healthy soil sort of thing and just working in compost
exactly.
to the ground
yeah.
sometimes is your best bet.
Yeah.
So, but it's just sort of an upside down way to do it. You're working the compost into a tower above the ground instead. So,
well, if it came from Fred Wishy, it has to be good.
Yeah, Daddy got it from somewhere else. I think down south was the first Japanese tomato ring.
Was he ever in Japan?
Daddy was, but I don't think he picked up Japanese tomato ring back then.
All right, here's a question from Miss Wishy.
All right,
it's from Dane. For growing in hard clay soils, I once heard the advice to plant a daikon radish for 3 years and let it rot into the ground, breaking up and fertilizing the soil naturally, as well as providing channels for moisture to penetrate the ground. Have you ever heard of this or seen it done?
I have heard of this. Some people call them fodder radishes, radishes that are going to have a deep kind of taproot.
Yep.
Exact same concept as promoting the use of green manure as cover crops in the wintertime, Bob.
Gotcha.
You plant like legumes, or you plant like deep-rooted plants like alfalfa, winter rye, clover, hairy vetch. The roots go down so deep that they help loosen up the soil and break up the soil. Then they are turned into the soil come spring before planting, so you're adding even more organic matter. So if you consistently do that, you'll improve your soil.
So it's something you do more in the fall after your crops are out, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just wait 3 years in a
right.
blank field for the radishes to rot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, green manure has been yeah. around a long time. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Always.
But our favorite method is working good old compost into the soil as well.
Yeah.
But if you do both of it consistently, I mean, every year.
Eventually.
You will have fabulous soil. You'll never have to use fertilizer again.
You betcha. If you have a good old compost question for Bob or Janine, visit the Homegrown page at WFPL.org. Email us at homegrown@WFPL.org or call us at 502-814-8246. Well, Miss Wishy, you've been occasionally described by people who don't know you very well as a woman of few words.
Oh, yeah. That would be definitely by people that don't know me very well,
so,
right?
Today's Latin word may...
does not describe me.
Come along in those lines.
All right. Possus, possum, or possa, or in compound words, you know,
yeah.
possa, like C-I. So P-A-U-C-U-S-U-M or A.
Like a paucity.
Paucity, exactly.
A short or a lack of, yeah.
Exactly. So it means few.
Right.
Most of the examples I hear are going to be part of a compound word, so it'll suggest even further what the Latin word means. Acacia constricta variety possa spinus.
The white thorn acacia.
Possa spinus.
Must have a few thorns.
Exactly.
A lovable thorn.
Yeah, no kidding.
Bush maybe.
A better acacia for
right.
sure. Astrantia passiflora.
Now you talk about a modest plant, the few flower masterwort.
Mm-hmm. I love astrantias actually. They're really
yeah.
cool. But passiflora, few flowers. Calicadenia. That's kind of fun to say.
It is.
Calicadenia passiflora.
The small flower western rosin weed.
I've got some rosin weed out in my prairie.
I've
yeah.
never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you introduce it when you planted your prairie? Is that what?
Yeah, I bought it from Drop Seed Native Plant Nursery.
There you
mm-hmm.
go.
Carex passiflora.
The star sedge.
Does star
it has
sedge.
Only a few flowers, if I remember right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if I recall.
Yeah.
Chrysoma passiflosculosa.
I want to hear you say it again.
Passiflosculosa.
Oh, you are a woman of a few syllables on that one.
Yeah. I have no idea what that means.
I don't either.
Okay. I meant to look that one up, but I forgot.
Well, you have such
few
moments.
Something.
Few moments to look these things up.
Yeah.
Like that.
Corn. I've never heard of this plant either.
I haven't either.
Cornus passinervis.
I want to get this. The black fruited dogwood.
What do you think passinervis means?
It must mean black-fruited.
No. Nervous is like veins.
Oh.
The nerve.
Few veins.
Few veins. So probably few veins in its foliage,
I'm gonna
right?
Look it up. I'm going to plant this tree.
Okay.
Black-fruited dogwood.
Encephalartos.
Whoa, man.
P- Pausa dentatus.
The Barberton cycad.
So it's a cycad that has few dentatus, meaning like toothed, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to have less toothy action, serrated sort of action, if you will, than perhaps another cycad.
And thank God there's a paucity of words left to talk about.
No
here.
Kidding.
This was a tough one, but a good word.
It is a good word. And
phew.
Yeah, I mean, and if you see Passiflora and you want blooms, you might want to skip over that.
Yeah, I'm
that
not sure.
Plant.
Yeah, it's a great advertising gimmick, but it's what it is.
It is what it is. All right. Well, that ends another edition of Homegrown. Next week on the show, Bob, we are indeed going to find out a little bit more about all the different kinds of lilies that are out there.
Homegrown is produced by the rarely loquacious Brad Yost in the studios of WFPL. I'm Bob Hill.
And I'm Janine Wishy. Join us next week for Homegrown on WFPL.